But finally, how do you tell the difference between the misinformation all about us and the real story, the solid evidence? A help will be in the new book by Elizabeth Finkel. Here she is with a thought experiment from Prove It, just published.
Prove It, a scientific guide to the post-truth era. That's the title of my book. After a six-year marathon, I penned the final words this last June. Then, as I waited for the launch, I grew increasingly nervous. What would I say if asked? Okay, so what's your guide? And what if I only had 2 minutes to answer? It happened last August. The chirpy host of a drive-time radio station fired the question at me. With so many conflicting opinions, how do you know who to believe? I didn't give her a very good answer. I'll have another go here, and I'll choose a timely example. Does Tylenol cause autism? You might recall that on September 22nd, straight after berating the United Nations for being dopes on climate change, President Trump delivered medical advice to pregnant women. Don't take Tylenol. Fight like hell not to take it. Tylenol is the US trade name for what we call Panadol, one of the main over-the-counter drugs used for pain and fever, and pretty much the only one recommended for pregnant women. At the press conference, Trump was flanked by his health advisers, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., head of Health and Human Services and renowned for anti-vaccine activism, Mehmet Oz, head of Medicare, and renowned for promoting quack treatments, Jay Bhattacharya, head of the National Institutes of Health, and renowned for promoting herd immunity rather than COVID lockdowns, and Marty Makary, head of the Food and Drug Administration, a pancreatic surgeon. Besides backing up the president's advice, they declared their administration to be purveyors of gold standard science. Immediately after the press conference, the world's experts begged to differ. They included the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the UK Medicine and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, the Australian Therapeutic Goods Administration, and the World Health Organization. As the WHO put it, there is no conclusive scientific evidence confirming a possible link between Tylenol and autism. Would my drive-time questioner find it hard to decide between the trustworthiness of Trump versus the WHO? I suspect not. But Marty Makary would have given her pause. Following on from Trump, the head of the Food and Drug Administration drew attention to a recent scientific paper. It was from no less than the Dean of Harvard School of Public Health, one of America's preeminent health institutions. Its historical achievements include ridding the US of smallpox and developing a polio vaccine. Sadly, it's now a shadow of its former self, thanks to the Trump administration slashing $200 million of its funding. A month before Trump delivered his medical advice, Andrea Baccarelli, the Dean of Harvard Medical School, briefed the Trump team on the link between the use of acetaminophen in pregnancy and autism. Just to be clear, acetaminophen is the chemical ingredient in Tylenol and Panadol. Bottom line, acetaminophen, Tylenol, and Panadol all refer to the same thing. Baccarelli had just published a review which concluded, "Our analyses support evidence consistent with an association between acetaminophen exposure during pregnancy and increased incidence of neurodevelopmental disorders. Appropriate and immediate steps should be taken to advise pregnant women to limit acetaminophen consumption to protect their offspring's neurodevelopment." At the press conference, Makary decided not to mince words. Quote, There is a causal relationship between prenatal acetaminophen use and neurodevelopmental disorders of ADHD and autism spectrum disorder, he declared. Makary further announced the FDA was this day taking action to update the label on acetaminophen and sending a letter to all US doctors letting them know about the risks in pregnancy. So, why shouldn't my radio host believe the Dean of Harvard School of Public Health? Here's my answer. Nullius in verba. That's Latin for take nobody's word for it. Not even the Dean of Harvard School of Public Health. Nullius in verba is the 1662 motto of the British Royal Society, and it captures the mojo of the scientific revolution. Science is brutal. In the normal course of things, these gladiatorial contests are played out in the arena of peer review. They're essential for checking flawed thinking and outright mistakes. Even Einstein grudgingly accepted he'd made a mistake that was corrected by peer review. He was trying to show gravitational waves could not exist. You can read about it in my book. What is true for physics is a million times more true for medicine. The sciencing of medicine is astonishingly recent. Bloodletting was still a thing up till the early 20th century. The fact is, studying humans is hard. Confound it, they just won't behave like lab rats. Their genes are different, their upbringing is different, and when it comes to their day-to-day activities, they are sloppy record keepers. Moreover, the scientists who study them just can't help letting their bias get in the way. Back to autism. Rates have been rising since the 1990s. We know that's linked to two things. First, in 1987, the diagnostic definition of autism was broadened to include a range of milder disorders. Second, in 1991, American children who got such a diagnosis qualified to receive special educational support services, so providing a great incentive to be diagnosed. But the scientists who study the causes of epidemics, epidemiologists, left open the possibility that other factors were also driving the rise of autism. Prime suspects ranged from environmental chemicals to the increasing age of parents at first pregnancy. But until last September, Tylenol had not been on the public radar. Tylenol use also became widespread for pregnant women since the 1990s. It was important that women used it to treat pain and fever. And not just for their own relief. Inflammation, pain, and fever in pregnant mothers was associated with a risk of birth defects, brain disorders, and autism. Concerns had also been raised that pain and fever relievers like aspirin or ibuprofen were associated with miscarriages and with rare kidney problems for the unborn baby. That pretty much left Tylenol as the only option for pregnant women. But was Tylenol safe? In 2013, Anne Bauer suggested it might not be. An epidemiologist at the University of Massachusetts, she compared Tylenol use in pregnant women and rates of autism across different countries. She found a positive correlation. She also found one between rates of circumcision and autism. Her assumption was that boy babies who got the snip also got Tylenol for pain relief. She suggested the link to Tylenol might explain why boys were over four times more likely to develop autism than girls. It was a very problematic study, because correlation is not causation. If Bauer had compared ice cream consumption with cases of people drowning, she would also have found a positive correlation. But one does not cause the other. Both events just happen to occur more frequently in summer. When it came to Tylenol use and autism, Bauer herself warned, No causal inference is intended. But it was enough to put Tylenol on the radar as a possible driver of rising rates of autism. In 2015, the Danes delivered a more incisive study. They monitored 64,000 women's use of Tylenol in pregnancy, based on phone interviews. Then they followed their offspring for close to 13 years. Those whose mothers used Tylenol were 50% more likely to be diagnosed with autism. Yet doctors did not rush to tell women to stop using Tylenol. Because just as summer was the hidden variable driving both ice cream consumption and drowning, there was likely to be a hidden variable or two at work here. Just so you get a feel for how tricky these studies are, let me give you another example. You won't like it. Search the literature and you'll find papers linking coffee consumption to lung cancer. A horrid thought. But why not? Coffee is loaded with chemicals. However, heavy coffee drinkers are also more likely to be smokers. Some studies find that if you correct for smoking, the link between coffee consumption and lung cancer disappears. So, following the Danish study, researchers tried to do what had been done for coffee and cancer: remove the effect of hidden variables. In the case of autism, things like whether the mother had an underlying infection, illness, or fever, her age and socioeconomic status, all of which have been found to drive up the risk of autism. Still, even after removing the effect of hidden variables, some studies still found a 20% increased risk of autism with Tylenol use. Brian Lee, an epidemiologist at Drexel University in Philadelphia, had been watching these studies. I've interviewed Lee, and what impresses me most is his suspicious mind. He knows he's dealing with a devious species, one whose behaviour lays all sorts of traps for epidemiologists. For instance, no doubt we've all been cheered up to learn that drinking 2 glasses of red wine per day is linked to healthier hearts. But hey, moderate wine drinkers also tend to be wealthier. It's probably wealth, not wine, that makes hearts healthier. Brian Lee seems to be engaged in an endless game of whack-a-mole. He was determined to find a way to whack the hidden autism mole. As we've seen, when a pregnant mother's age and illnesses are accounted for, the link between Tylenol use and autism diminishes but does not disappear. But what if the very genes a mother carries are also muddying the data? This is a bit tricky, so bear with me. Whether or not a person develops autism is 80% determined by the genes they carry. So the genes carried by a mother play a major role in determining if her child will develop autism. But what if some of those same genes also predispose a mother to use Tylenol? Perhaps they make her more sensitive to pain and inflammation. But how do you prove that? You study mothers who've had 2 children and who use Tylenol in one pregnancy but not the other. The mother's genes are exactly the same for both pregnancies, and the only variable is Tylenol use. Of course, you need a very big data set to do such a study, as well as excellent record keeping. The Swedes provided just such a data set of nearly 2.5 million births. Using that database, Brian Lee and his colleagues dug in to try and ferret out the hidden genetic variables linking Tylenol to autism. When they correlated the use of Tylenol in pregnancy with autism diagnosis at age 10, they saw what many other studies did. Tylenol use correlated with a 26% increased risk. Then they scoured the mother's medical records for factors that raised the risk of autism independently of Tylenol. Things like infections, maternal age, and the mother's mental health. Correcting for these variables still showed Tylenol raised the risk by 5%. Finally, Lee and his colleagues did something no one had yet done. Because they had such a vast database at their disposal, they studied just those mothers who'd had two children and where one child had autism but not the other. In a sense, these mothers were as close as you can get to lab rats. Same genes, same environment, but children with different diagnoses of autism. There were some 16,000 children like this. So was there a link between their autism and their mothers taking Tylenol? Yes. The mother's use of Tylenol reduced the risk of autism by 2%. The figure was not considered statistically significant. So, bottom line, no effect. I think you'd agree this study, the largest and most innovative to date, was very powerful. The Dean of Harvard School of Public Health didn't think so. Baccarelli and his colleagues carried out a type of systematic review. In the hierarchy of evidence-based medicine, the systematic review holds pride of place because it is a study of the studies. It harvests every research paper and grades them, like apples, according to their quality. And here, alas, science can give way to subjectivity. For reasons that are far from clear to experts, Baccarelli's systematic review didn't harvest every study. It cherry-picked, and then it gave Brian Lee's study a low grade. According to epidemiologist James Thomas, they have not even attempted to be comprehensive. Thomas is based at University College in London and carries out reviews for England's Department of Health. Quoting Thomas again, in short, their search strategy, search terms, and reporting are far from the standards expected in professional systematic reviews. Thomas and other epidemiologists have also wondered why Baccarelli's study was published in an environmental journal rather than a medical one. Was this a way to sidestep peer review by medical experts? In 2023, a New York judge also found the way Baccarelli sorted through the evidence below par. She was adjudicating a claim by parents that Tylenol use in pregnancy was responsible for their children's autism. The trial had experts lined up in combat formation, epidemiologists, geneticists, toxicologists, and psychiatrists, for and against the claims made by the plaintiffs. In a masterful analysis of the criteria that must be met to establish causation, the judge vivisected Baccarelli's findings and deemed them inadmissible. As she wrote, in general, Dr. Baccarelli downplays those studies that undercut his causation thesis and emphasizes those that align with his thesis. Together, these deficiencies demonstrate that his opinion does not reflect a reliable application of the principles and methods to the facts of the case. Clearly, the contest between experts can get pretty ugly. But it's business as usual for science. Brutal contest is how science self-corrects. What's abnormal is the Trump team lording it over science. It's abnormal, but it's eerily familiar. Remember George Orwell's 1984? When Big Brother is in charge, 2 + 2 = 5. So, if my drive time presenter is listening, here's my answer to the question of who do you believe? When it comes to the apparent link between Tylenol and autism, the best you can do is go with the consensus of many expert bodies, like our Therapeutic Goods Administration, who resoundingly reject Trump's advice. Their advice is that Tylenol remains the recommended treatment for pain or fever in pregnancy when used as directed, and that untreated pain and fever can pose risks to the unborn baby. We can have confidence in expert bodies because they are constituted based on expertise, not political leanings. And crucially, Whatever consensus they reach is the result of fierce debate, the hallmark of science. When politics dominates science, as it has in the Trump administration, put your bullshit detectors on high alert. Because when you mix science with politics, you get politics.
Dr. Elizabeth Finkel's new book is Prove It, highly recommended.